You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, Senior Minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin.
Good morning, and welcome to Unity of Tustin. It is the week after Easter, and I'm excited to start exploring what does life look like after the resurrection? What does life look like for you after those moments of awakening, of transformation, of something fundamentally shifting in your life? That's really not the end of the journey. In some ways, that's actually the beginning of the next phase of the journey. So as we step into this field of rebirth and anchoring that in consciousness, let us join together in prayer. And so I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. Feeling the power and the presence of the living Christ, that awakened divine that is not localized in Jesus, but is actually an energy pattern, a non-local consciousness-based field that we slip inside of, that we open to, body, heart, mind, and soul. And so this morning, we set the intention to open to that field in an even deeper way. Listening for the growing edges in our own consciousness, in our own application of that Christ principle. And so we hold this intention with both effort and making room for the grace, allowing for that space for the divine to move through us and as us, igniting our heart, inspiring our mind, piercing the veils. And so it is. Amen. World as one. To develop any level of ability to live from that perspective, there's some foundational work that we have to do first. And I love coming back to the resurrection story, and it's particularly the relationships between Jesus and the disciples, because really the disciples hold the, they play our part in a lot of our spiritual journey, because they're the ones that are questioning, that are fighting, that are not really getting it, that ask the dumb questions that inspire the great teachings, and that are immersed in this field. And then, as we'll see, especially with Peter, Peter becomes kind of our guy, that as soon as he's outside of the field of that Christed consciousness, he loses it. And he can't hold it. And isn't it interesting that he represents faith? And yet there's something about him that has to still, there's still work to be done. There's still something that needs to be cultivated. There's been some great emails that Father Richard Rohr has been sending out. He is a Franciscan priest, and just really a luminary in consciousness, and particularly holding this perspective for a Christianity that is beyond what was really seated in consciousness around 300 AD, and really hasn't changed much since. He's on the forefront of saying, let's look at some of these long-held beliefs and go back to what really was preached in the gospel and incorporate modern science and all of that. So for the last 2 weeks, he just started a new series yesterday, but for the last 2 weeks, he has been looking at the role of Christianity, of religion, of faith in the context of the disenfranchised, what he calls the powerless. And what he talks about is that religion as a whole, when Christianity in particular moved from being the outcasts to the religion of power, there was a fundamental shift in the consciousness and a dissociation with the disenfranchised, which the Christians were prior to being embraced as the religion of Rome. And so he talks about when we are, to extrapolate that into our own life and tie it into to Peter, which we're going to go into in depth in a minute, when we are self-sufficient and comfortable, there's a greater likelihood that our religion, or I would even say our spirituality, can become corrupt. Because it doesn't understand. There's no room for the mystery of a life that's transformed. There's no capacity to really see how people can change, how life flows, how we can become something more, or any interest in developing compassion. There's little need for moving outside of ourselves. Can you feel that in your life when you've had those moments? Everything is pretty good. I don't need to push myself. I don't need to step out of myself, because life is pretty much okay. That's called plateauing. And there's nothing wrong with plateauing as long as it's not our forever state of consciousness. Because there's nothing that's asking us to move, to grow, which we are constantly being invited into. The whole aspect of this dimension on earth is really about spiritual growth, about soul growth, about becoming conscious and connected with that divine, timeless aspect of us while in form. We are the bridge between the formless and the form, and can truly create heaven on earth, or what seems to be more happening is we're creating hell on earth, because we're in this place of complacency in a lot of ways. And that's particularly associated with the people who have some level of power, wealth, privilege, whatever it may be, that as long as we're okay, then everything else will be okay. And just as the song Imagine is inviting into, we are all connected. We are literally, science is saying, literally all connected, and we are in consciousness certainly all connected. And the gospel even talks about that. We are each aspects of the body of Christ. Or if we want to take it out of the Christian terminology, we are each points of consciousness at play. So anchoring in that consciousness, in that awareness, becomes really important, because without that, there is a sense of disconnection and not really being engaged in what is happening in our world, whether you want to look at it as your family unit, your local community, or even the greater world. There's something missing when we lean into contentment too much. Doesn't mean we have to always be pushing, because that creates its own pathology. But there's certainly a numbness that can develop when we're okay. That is actually not about the living Christ. That is not really about stepping into that field of oneness. So I want to look at my friend Peter, because I think he has so much to offer us. He's the one who really, John and Peter have a lot of playtime in the Gospels. They're really foundational to the teachings that Jesus was wanting and trying to impart. And at the end of the day, you know, he leaves Peter really the energetic overseer of the evolution of spirituality, of teaching people and inspiring people, and he leaves John really the how to implement it in the world, the state of change, or changing the state aspect. So, but Peter in particular is this really hot cold kind of guy, and I recognize in my own life those places where I'm all in while I'm there. And then as soon as I leave, I'm on to something else. Anyone experience that place in them? Well, that's a lot of Peter. And particularly when it comes to stage development, to shifting fundamentally your worldview and experiencing a whole new way of operating in the world, of literally what we did in the meditation, having that become more of a permanent reality where you're not going up to thought and categorizing everything. Okay, that's a wall, that's a screen, that's Amanda. Like before there's the inner monologue, there is awareness, there is consciousness that doesn't need that inner dialogue to survive, that actually has a capacity for a greater wisdom. And similarly, that we don't need to go down, if we're not always thinking, that doesn't mean that we're falling asleep or that we're numb. There's actually a way to stay awake in the world prior to thought and prior and without going to sleep, without numbing out. So when we access that level of consciousness, eventually, what happens is that when we tap in enough, when we fall in enough through grace and through our practice, through our effort, something fundamentally begins to shift when we let it. But we want to bring along our capacity and our willingness to let it shift us as well, and not deny that this is something that's really important. Like our spiritual path is actually important to us. So Peter, when they're on the road to Jerusalem, says to Jesus, you know, I love you, I will follow you anywhere. Where are you going? And Jesus says, where I am going, you cannot go. In fact, you will deny me three times. And Peter, what does he say? No. Oh no, I will not do that. So there's this willingness, this surety of faith in himself that he will not deny what he loves most, what he values most. And for a lot of us on the spiritual path, at some point, what we love most and what we value most is some variation, some version of loving God with all our heart, living God with all our being, living from that awakened awareness, some version of that. that then, yes, shows up in loving relationships and a greater sense of peace and joy, but ultimately has something to do with that fundamental orientation of our beingness in God, as God, that says, I won't do anything to mess that up. And then as soon as we're out at the grocery store or out with friends or whatever, there's like this clicking off. That's the Peter part of us that goes to sleep, that's reliably unreliable, that has that willingness but isn't grounded yet. One of the interpretations of his name is actually changeableness, that he's very changeable depending on the environment, depending on his situation. This is the spiritual chameleon in us. That when, and I will own that this has been me in certain circumstances, and it's not because I'm trying to be skillful, it's because I was being scared of, you know, when someone is sharing an alternate view on something that a moral or ethical, that I don't say anything. That's that Peter part of us too, that's a very changeable part of us that is not willing to stand in our faith, to stand in our own truth with deep love. And actually, ultimately, that's the only way faith will be steadfast, will be that rock that Jesus sees that Peter is when it is grounded in love. So then eventually, this, our beloved Peter, this aspect of our own self that is changeable, that lives kind of in two worlds, that has these peak experiences, but then also kind of goes into living ordinary, normal life, eventually does, when someone says, aren't you with Jesus after the crucifixion? Weren't you with that guy? Didn't you live with him for 3 years? And in the Bible, it says, it's recorded as he said three times, I am not. It's not even no, but it's something about this denial of who he is. I am is, in the Hebrew scriptures, you know, who Moses asks, who should I tell them sent me? I am that I am. There's this divine nature that is our identity, this I am. When we use that, those words, we're claiming who we really are. And in this moment of identifying with what he has stood and even cut someone's ear off for, in the Garden of Gethsemane, he is now denying and saying, I am not that. So we have to be really aware of those moments in our own life where we actually go out of our way to deny, because that will block the sustained consciousness of the Christ, the sustained awakening that is already present, that does live from that field of awakeness, of love, of peace. It's our unlived potential when it is denied. So now he's really in a pickle. He's denied. Jesus predicted that he would deny him. He says, oh no, I would never do that. Then all of a sudden, he realizes, yes, actually, he did deny. There is still this unwavering, this wavering capacity, this changeableness, this unreliableness to his orientation, to how he's showing up. And so, he, you know, what do you do? It's like if you were to leave your whole life for some startup organization and just pour your whole, you know, sell your house, invest all your money, your time, your energy into this, you know, this proposition, then all of a sudden it's over. The person dies, they leave, it's done. Now what do you do? Except there was this deep spiritual component that was also present, that was really about him waking up to his own identity, that he could sustain when he's in the presence of someone, Jesus, who has awoken, but on his own cannot. This is equivalent to when you're in the presence of a master and you feel a fundamental shift in how you're operating. Things that typically annoy you don't annoy you. You show up more loving, soft, gentle, kind. There's an ease to slipping into the silence that on your own is not there. It's not anchored yet. Same thing with Peter. So he's at this question of now what? What do I do with my life? Remember what he decides to do? He was a fisherman before he joined Jesus. And so he decides, I'm going to go back to doing what I used to do. I'm here to tell you, I haven't ever found that to really work. Because what it's really saying in consciousness is, after this amazing experience that has been truly life-changing and that has the potential to literally alter his life and his way of showing up in the world forever, there's like this denial of that. This trying to forget that ever happened. Because it's asking him, the crucifixion and then the resurrection is really asking all of the disciples to step into their own power, to step into what Jesus was inviting them into before. And he does say to them, it's recorded that he says, you cannot, I have taken you as far as I can take you while I'm here. The rest of the way is on your own. This is equivalent to when a teacher, when a guru says to the disciple, okay, we've gone as far as we can go, now you must leave. And that is actually in some of the more traditional guru-disciple relationships in the East, is exactly what happens. You are kicked out because you cannot rely ultimately on someone else to do the work for you. And again, Peter, when he's faced with this existential question of what do I do, he goes back, he tries to deny and goes back to what he did before. You cannot go back. And it's evidenced when he is in the boat. And so he says to some of the disciples, I'm going to go back and go fishing. And some of the disciples are like, we're going to go with you, because they don't know what to do either. There's this lostness. Now they're in the tomb. They're in this place of great unknowing and unrest, and mystery, and surrender. So they go back to Galilee. Specifically to the Sea of Tiberias, and fish all night. And it's reported that their net was on the left-hand side of the boat, and they toiled all night, and there was nothing. Which is very symbolic, further confirmation that when we have an awakening, when something has fundamentally shifted and how we show up in the world, when we have the capacity to see and operate differently, and then we try and go back to the way things were, it is impossible. You will toil, and there will be nothing to show for it. It will be painful. Today is the anniversary, well, it's the day, it's the day 4 years ago that my mom passed away. And I've been really reflecting on that aspect of my consciousness that absolutely knows that the growth that I've done or that has happened to me and or both, I could not have done in the same way if she was still around. Absolutely. I for those of you who don't know, I lived with my mom toward the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years. She had cancer. She was sick. So I started to become more of a caretaker for her. But ultimately, it was a very quick passing. But that it was unexpected. It was actually not from the cancer. She didn't pass away from the cancer. But there was this whole. I could feel myself energetically, and I really was reflecting on this even this morning. I could, on the day she was supposed to come home from the hospital, I could feel myself really slipping into this place of complacency, of becoming insular, of really just devoting myself to doing my work here and taking care of my mom and just having that be my world. And interestingly, it was that day that she passed away. It was almost like that was ripped apart. And it could, you know, that was not an option to become complacent, to not step into what was being called forward. I don't think that's why she died, but it certainly was one of the things that happened as a result of her passing away, that I was not afforded the luxury of becoming complacent. I was asked to move forward. And it's really fascinating in those moments in our life, and I'll try and occasionally, you know, when we pop into another reality, there's something in us that gets nostalgic for how things were, even if that wasn't the truth at all. Hindsight is not 20/20 sometimes. There's that, you know, seeing life in rose-colored glasses that somehow make things rosier than they really were. But I notice an aspect of me, the Peter aspect of me, that tries to recreate or go back to some of the ways that relationship really nurtured and supported me and worked and ask other people to fill some of those roles that they haven't signed up to fulfill. I'm totally looking, you know, last week, that piece of the scripture that says, why are you looking among the dead for what is living? You cannot look for what is living among the dead. It's that same thing that Peter is now wrestling with, trying to go back to how it was before, when his life has absolutely been changed, and he is denying it. He's not willing. He's in struggle with that. And so on the shore, they're in this boat toiling. And on the shore, Jesus appears and says, cast your net on the right, which is really symbolically and metaphysically, we see that as turning to the side of truth, leaning into the truth. In the Evolutionary Collective, there was a saying that I was a part of a group last year, and some people still are a part of it, that we love the truth more than we love being comfortable. And there's something in that shift from the net, from the left to the right, that is about diving into what is true. Our capacity increases
to receive a multitude of fish, so much that it's almost, it's difficult to pull them all in. But again, it takes that visitation from of a perspective outside to call us back. And then it's after they've eaten, they've shared in substance. This is where Jesus says to Peter, "Do you love me?" There's a restoration. There's a calling in one more time. A reminder one more time to live in this new consciousness, to inhabit it. So it's interesting, in the Greek, you know, there's multiple names for love in Greek. In the Greek, it's written that Jesus says, "Do you love me?" And he uses love as the agape love, the God love. And Peter answers, "You know I love you." But he answers with the definition of love that is about brotherly love. He still doesn't quite get it because there's this personalization to the relationship. So Jesus is asking, "Do you love God?" And Peter's responding, "Yes, I love you." And so Jesus answers, "Feed my sheep." And then he asks again. And he says, this time again, he asks, "Do you love God?" And once again, Peter says, "I love you." It's the brotherly love. And so he then says, "Tend my sheep." And then the third time, Jesus asks, "Do you love me?" Again, there's an anchoring in love. Faith, that the faith that Peter has is very up and down. Jesus, this Christ of consciousness is saying, you have to orient yourself differently. It's the only way you'll sustain, the only way you'll really become that highest vision of the steadfastness, the rock upon which all foundation, all spiritual evolution is based. And so then Jesus shifts it to, "Do you love me?" And in desperation, Peter says, "Yes, of course, I do. I love you. I've said it three times now." And so then he says, "Feed my sheep." He says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish." You too will need to release any attachments and go through your own transformation, your own crucifixion experience. And it will not be me. You too have the capacity for this. So as you move forward in this week, on this week after Easter, where we're celebrating this resurrection consciousness, not as something that happened to someone over 2,000 years ago, but as a living reality of our own spiritual journey, I invite you to continue to be aware of that Peter part of you that's all in until you're not. And come back to that question. But it's not about, "Do you love me?" that Jesus asks to restore that quality of faith. But it's, "Do you love the divine? Do you love God?" And the answer will determine how grounded in that true transformative quality, that essence that you have the capacity for.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.